So we do not have drinks on us right now because we
pre-gamed,
pre-funked. Because I'm from Seattle.
And I'm from Texas.
So that's what I say and that's what she says. But welcome anyway. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddush Book Club.
L'chaim. Creatures.
Yonit is very excited about the Mystery Maccabee gift she got. There was glitter on your hands from the dragon flagon.
I've got dragon charms
and a dragon book.
A book on crocheting dragon figurines.
So, yes. So, she's like wiping the glitter off her hands.
Yeah, glitter is the gift that keeps on giving.
You know, you're about to hear our upcoming conversation. I wouldn't even call it an interview. It was like really a hangout.
Totally.
With Rachel Lynn Solomon.
Our new BFF.
Totally love her. It was a Seattle author, and we were going to have, like, an interview audio, and then Yonit's like, you know, she lives in Seattle. We should just
be in person, like normal people.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine having a Zoom with someone that lives, like, a 10-minute drive from you?
Right. So we were going to do that, almost. It almost happened.
Yeah. But so. I first of all, it was meant to be that we met in person because I sent the Zoom invite to the wrong person by accident. And then in the meantime, you were making arrangements with her. And then her husband had an event that he was doing at his house. So she was like, let's go
at our local bookstore, pub, coffee shop.
Yes. So you're going to hear all the background noise of being out
live on location.
Yeah. Being out live on location. And the music in the place and the clinking of the glasses. And I drank a mojito.
And I had a Crispin. I was a little overwhelmed with the cocktail options. But I just had to streamline.
I was at a bar recently. There's a bar in the Bellevue area. No, Bellevue. It's not a mental asylum here. Here it's a town. It's a very pretty town north of Seattle. And they have a movie theater you have to be 21 and older to get into. And it's as beautiful as like a really nice AMC, like the cozy seats.
Yeah.
But they have a table in front of each one of seat, and then you can order drinks.
I love it. I love the idea of that.
It's great. So I'd already, done that recently. But the whole menu of drinks is all tequila. And I'm allergic. There was one drink I could have.
It's like when we go to a real like brew house. I'm like, well, I don't drink beer. So
then what?
Now what? But I'm not allergic. I just don't like it. So I don't know. But yeah, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
And this is how out of touch I am. Is that more than one bar I've been to has had a Hendrick Lamar, which is Hendrick's gin with something mixed into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's a reference that I should.
It's a Hedy Lamar reference.
I don't think so.
Isn't it? Hendrick Lamar would be.
Is there a person?
Hedy Lamar?
A pop star? No, that's...
Okay, so is it Hendrick that's the alcohol or is Lamar the alcohol?
Hendrick's gin.
It's Hendrick's gin and they call it the Hendrick's Lamar.
Yeah.
So...
I don't get the right of the
Google. I'm going to go with Jewish historical figure.
I know. And she invented Wi-Fi?
Yeah. Who everyone knows is basically like Gal Gadot is going to play her. But that's awesome because I consider Gal Gadot like the modern Hedy Lamar. Except for the science stuff.
Right. Well, that's Maya Bialik.
That's Maya Bialik. Maya Bialik is the modern Hedy Lamar, but 100%. Gal Gadot is going to play her.
Fair.
Yeah. So anyway,
we got off topic again.
Where are we? Okay. So we went to Third Place Books with Rachel and Solomon. You're about to hear that. I hope that you enjoy the upcoming conversation.
Yeah. And look out for her books and her story in It's a Whole Spiel.
Yes, for sure. So quick, funny story. Not so funny because it was super frustrating, but basically while we were uploading, the app that we use to record this podcast was doing a site-wide reboot and mid-upload. And our audio with Rachel Lynn Solomon got lost, so we started over. And ironically, because it's snowing outside, we had to do it via Zoom. I know we said we wouldn't. So easy to get together, but not when it snows in the city. When it snows in the city, people are like, we're done. I'm staying in the house. And by people, I mean me, not my husband or children who are braver than I am. I do not like driving down slopes and over black ice. We re-recorded via Zoom, but we really did have a good time at Third Place Books. And I really hope we could get together again and do another interview with Rachel where you can hear us eating and drinking and all that. But in the meantime, here is our Zoom conversation with Rachel Lynn Solomon. Enjoy.
So this is actually our take two, because as I said in the intro, our audio got lost in the interwebs. So welcome again, Rachel and Solomon, to the Kiddish Book Club.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
you know, we had such a good time.
You know, really the thing is,
yeah.
There's no way I'm going to sound as intelligent as I did the first time. So that's just a great disclaimer for whatever I say from here on out. Like, people will know that I can be better.
We're also not forcing you to talk around a salad. So,
I was eating a very large salad last time. I was debating grabbing a snack beforehand and I was going to get carrots. And I was like, that sounds like a bad idea for a podcast.
I literally just had a cough drop in my mouth and I was like, get rid of it before we start. Meanwhile, our original recording was like us having cocktails and drinks and glass clinking and waitresses
yeah.
making orders. So the fact that I was like, oh, I can't have the sound of a cocktail, like that's just silly. So we are very excited to talk to you, because I have a copy here of It's a Whole Spiel, which when we met, we are very happy that you signed, which we love. You know, we love It's a Whole Spiel. Like, we're the biggest fangirls for this young adult anthology of like all Jewish stories. And can you give the listeners a little primer about your story, Aftershocks?
Yeah, definitely. So it was a really fun project to be part of, and I was just so honored that they reached out to me. So my short story, it's called Aftershocks. It is semi-autobiographical in that it is about a Jewish girl who's a junior in high school who is dating the only other school. There were not very many of us. And she is not very observant, and he is somewhat observant, definitely more observant than she is. And they've been dating for a week, and she gets stranded at his house during Shabbat when an earthquake hits. And if anyone in Seattle knows, there's just this fear of like the big one hitting at any time. And I thought it would be really fun to exacerbate her anxiety and, you know, all those new relationship fears and uncertainties by adding in a natural disaster.
Yeah, meeting the boyfriend's parents and then you get stuck at his house when the big one hits is, and you have anxiety.
Right. I also like that, wait, are we dating? Because maybe we're not. Maybe I misunderstood everything and we had a different conversation, but now we haven't talked. I like the whole thing. I was like, oh, so relatable.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah, it's right. Like you like decide that you're dating and then you ignore each other for the next week at school, which is also very yeah. in line with my experience. It was like, let's be dating. Okay, we won't acknowledge each other.
But now life is too awkward to continue. So let me
exactly.
I do not miss being 14. Not even a little bit. I think I literally did that. I think I quote dated a boy and then we like never talked because we were 14. And it was like, oh, now that we've decided we're dating, it's super awkward. Whereas if we were 16, it would have been different. So really hitting on that anxiety of beginning to date for the first time. Oh, and you also have her being anxious about not being Jewish enough.
Yes, that's a big part of it too. And that's something that I experienced it a little bit as a teen because, you know, growing up in a suburb of Seattle without a lot of other Jewish kids around, I definitely felt like in elementary school, it sort of felt like the weight of Judaism was all on me. Like, it would be December and it would be, Rachel, why don't you stand up and give a presentation about Hanukkah? and, you know, I was like the quietest kid in class. So that
you
was
own explaining Judaism to literally everybody here.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's my responsibility, right? To educate everyone. So there was that. And then once I got to middle school and high school, there were other Jewish kids. And I felt this immediate kinship with them, but then you realize that their customs and traditions are different from yours, and you start to question, like, am I really that Jewish? Is this thing that's part of my identity? Like, sort of a like Judaism light version, and they are like really Jewish or actually Jewish. So that was something that I grappled with, something I grappled with throughout college. And even today, as I'm writing Jewish characters in YA, which there still are very few of. And you know, it's something my Jewish friends and I talk about a lot too.
Yeah, this idea of everyone thinking that they're not Jewish enough or they're not the right kind of Jewish is definitely a running theme throughout this anthology. And it's fascinating because really, for me, growing up observant, I didn't necessarily always have that feeling of I don't belong in any space, the Jewish space I walk into, right? But then, like, as I got older, I started noticing there were people around me who actually, like, didn't think they belonged places. And it kind of made them feel like maybe I shouldn't be here then and not stay. And I think that's actually a fascinating little thing that people can be aware of. Like, maybe reading this will make someone look around themselves and go, who here doesn't look comfortable? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it is sort of interesting growing up in this way, because I felt, as I started to meet other Jewish people, I felt not Jewish enough for them, but then too different for people who were Christian or other religions. I mean, predominantly Christian. So you're like, where actually do I fit? Like, is there some other subset of Jews that also feel weird and awkward about what they are and who they are? Which is, I think, all of us, honestly, to some degree.
That's true. I mean, we all feel, even if it's not about your Judaism, you definitely feel like you might be in a room and you're like, maybe I shouldn't be here, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think as women, that maybe is a thing.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I know my fair share of introverted men, but a lot of men walk into a room and I'm like, you just fine.
You walk into any room and immediately want to leave. So I would love to know.
I feel like there's also social cues about, like, what am I wearing? Am I too dressy? Am I not dressy enough? Like, oh no, I'm the only one wearing a color. Gosh, why are you all wearing navy or black? Why am I the only one who wore lavender? Or like, there's always everything. You walk into a room and I'm always immediately like, oh no.
Yeah. And it's that teenage feeling of everyone is looking at me and judging me. And I definitely, you know, think that it takes probably years to get over that, but you really were able to beautifully capture that anxiety in your story. You know, we've talked about this in other interviews with your co-authors, that anxiety seems to be a running theme in this anthology.
It is. It's interesting. And I don't know if there's like just something about growing up Jewish in the US that makes you a little more anxious. You know, not, I definitely, yeah, like, I maybe you can edit this part, but I'm stumbling over everything. Yeah, I don't know. It just causes you to be a little more alert and like aware of not just like microaggressions, but more harmful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you said when we started this talk, you kind of felt like being the only Jewish girl in your school or in your class made you personally responsible for like representing Judaism and all Jewish people to everyone you knew come December time. And so there's a lot of pressure on each of us in America, especially those of us not living in the tri-state area, to kind of like be representative of Jewish people everywhere. Do you find, okay, so a writing question, I know we talked about this last time a little bit, let's touch on it again, is how do you incorporate Judaism into your writing in general, or do you?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because it actually wasn't something I did until my debut novel, which was You'll Miss Me When I'm Gone, and that came out in 2018, 2 years ago now, which is so weird to think about. Feels like no time and tons of time. But I had written 4 books before then that I tried to get published. So I was writing seriously with the intent of publishing, hopefully, for a while. And it wasn't until that 5th book, You'll Miss Me When I'm Gone, that the characters just came to me Jewish, and they were more observant than I was, which required talking to a lot of other Jewish people and learning more about their experience, which was really interesting and something I really enjoy doing for my books. when I'm writing slightly outside of my own Jewish experience. And it just really informed a lot of like the family dynamics and how the two main characters who are sisters, how they related to each other and to their faith. And also around that time, I was realizing the lack of Jewish main characters in contemporary realistic young adult novels. It's sort of sad going on Goodreads and seeing lists of those kinds of books and seeing my book as like one of the few, and then they're, you know, classic, like books from many years ago. You know, you can Google just like Jewish young adult novels, and I swear every time I do this, like the Diary of Anne Frank comes up. That is how few we have. So it wasn't until I saw kind of the reaction to the book from Jewish readers and also from non-Jewish readers, a lot of whom were like, I had never read about Judaism this way, like with characters who are practicing as opposed to maybe a passing mention in another book that does have a Jewish main character. So I sort of made a vow to myself that I was only going to write Jewish main characters from that point forward, and not necessarily practicing or observant. I just felt really strongly about continuing to explore my own identity that way, and hopefully continuing to provide like a window and a mirror for other readers in some
of it. It's so, first of all, as a writer, that's encouraging to hear, because like for me, the Jewish anxiety is, I can't believe all my books that I'm planning have Jewish main characters. Like at some point, like, are people going to be like, too much Judaism, Jessica, too much Judaism? Like, but that's, no one else says that about, you know, other authors. So like, why not? Yeah.
That's how I feel about kind of any marginalization. Like no one is ever told like, we already have enough white books, or we have enough Christian books right now.
A straight white male character? No. He has to have a reason to be straight white male. Come on.
Yeah, I think you're going to need to not make him straight or white, because we already have one of those in this other book. Like, can you imagine an editor? An editor would never say that. Never even occur to them.
I bring that up every time. Like, inevitably, whenever I'm on a panel remotely relating to diversity, the last question, when we're like, okay, there's 3 minutes left, who wants to ask a last question? Someone will raise their hand and just ask, how do you write diversity? It's like, great, we can cover this in a few minutes. But a lot of times there are, like, usually white, I mean, I don't want to say usually, because it is every time, like, there's usually a white person who is asking how to write diversity, or asking, like, how can I still have a seat at the table when the only books that seem like, that it seems are getting picked up are by like diverse or are authors from marginalized backgrounds, which first of all, definitely still a minority of publishing. There's a lot of statistics to back that up. And also I like say this every time, there is no one standing at a gate telling you we have too many white books.
Right.
Like making more space for others doesn't mean that the space is diminishing for you.
Yes. I see a lot of times people comment that they got a rejection and the rejection would say, I already have, you know, I already have two gay books that I'm representing. I can't represent more gay books. And I'm like, well, did you say that in your rejection for, you know, a white straight girl who's going to take down, you know, the dystopian society?
wait. Not with the brooding YA hero.
No, yeah. Did you say that for all the brooding YA heroes? I already have two brooding YA heroes. I don't need another brooding YA hero. You don't. But it's so hopefully eventually what'll come is they'll realize that as a reader, because I'm an avid reader, when I read a book, like it's a whole spiel, the first thing I want to do is go buy or take out from the library a book from every author in here and read more of it. I'm not like, well, I got my Jewish YA fix, I'm done. That's not how reading works. Like, you get a taste of something, you want more.
There are three series that are cozy mysteries where the main character owns a cupcake shop. Cupcake shop. Three that I can think of, and there could be more. So if you like cupcakes and you like mysteries, there are three different series you can pick from. I don't think that if they can't saturate the cupcake mystery market, the Jewish cupcake mystery market still open, just if anyone needs that idea.
But I think that's pretty much like the theme of our episodes. Yoni and I will be like, if you like being sad and you like crying, here's a whole bunch of books that will make you cry. Or if you like Holocaust books, here's some, like, we're not sitting there talking about a million books that have nothing to do with each other. Every one of our episodes is books that have a running theme. So to reject a book because, oh, this theme's too similar to the other theme, I'm like, well, do you not know how English class works? Like, we pick a whole bunch of books in one theme and teach them. So I'm definitely happy to see progress. Like, I know that when I started queering a year ago, that there were far less Jewish books out in middle grade and YA than there are 1 year later. Like, the list is long enough now that hopefully, I know it's like, it's nice to see your own book on a list and on every list, but it shouldn't be because it's the only one.
Right. And it's interesting, you know, I am definitely not as familiar with middle grade. My guess is there's maybe slightly more in middle grade just because of bar and bat mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there are, I mean, it's probably then also hard to find a middle grade that is not about that. But in YA, just to give like some very unofficial statistics, for the past couple of years on Goodreads, I've been tracking the number of books that are traditionally published by a Jewish author that have a Jewish main character. And last year there were 13. And this year so far I have tracked 9.
So far?
Yeah. And I put out, you know, I've put out multiple calls on Twitter for this kind of thing, like gotten a lot of input from other Jewish people. And like I said, these are not official lists by any means. I am positive there's stuff I'm missing. I mean, I really hope there is stuff that I'm missing, but just the fact that so far it's fewer books than last year. Yeah, the fact that you can count them, first of all, yeah. But yeah, the fact that it is fewer books than last year is quite sad.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right about the bar bat mitzvah thing. When I see middle grade Jewish, I often see bar bat mitzvah being the theme, and I'm guilty of it too. I don't know what to tell you. They're 12, oh, you know, like.
That's not a judgment. That's a big thing.
Yeah. It's a good thing. They're 12. It's just harder to come up with a story for a Jewish teenager because you're like, well, why wouldn't I just age them down and make them 12? That's a major life event. It's not like when you're not Jewish and 16 is the major life event. For us, it's 12. So, yeah. Yes, it's totally different. You know, I as a reader definitely need to read all those 13 and then all those 9 because I'm definitely not I'm not caught up on them yet. But once I get through them, I want to be like, well, where's more? I want more to be coming. So
right. And I recently sold a romance novel, and I'm also a huge romance reader. And like with romance, there are very few standalones because as soon as people finish one book, they want the book about the main character's brother or the main character's best friend. And like, they want to see their story. And those, like, I mean, the romance market is just so, it really like thrives on people like needing more and more. Oh, sorry.
I'm so excited for your book. I can't.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, great.
I can just give a quick pitch for it.
Tell us. Go for it.
Yeah, so the book that I just recently sold, it's called The X Talk, and it's was acquired by Berkeley at a Penguin Random House, and it is about two coworkers at a public radio station who pose as exes to host a show about dating in order to save their station. Shockingly, as they are hosting the show and pretending to have dated, they wind up falling for each other. And it is sort of like a workplace romantic comedy. I had a lot of fun working on it. I used to work in public radio, and I just kind of put in all of the NPR jokes that I have stored up over the past however many years. And I just love, I love what's happening in romance with romantic comedies. And I'm really excited to be joining that. World.
Did you get a chance to write a lot of banter because it was a radio-themed book?
I did, yeah. I mean, hopefully. I always feel like dialogue is my weakest point, actually. And part of the reason that I wrote my book that's coming out this year is called Today, Tonight, Tomorrow. And it is a YA rom-com that takes place all in 24 hours on the last day of senior year. And it follows two main characters who've been at odds all throughout high school. We're thrown together on this last day, and I really wanted to challenge myself to write like realistic, fun dialogue with these two characters because a lot of the book is just the two of them together. It is a very slow burn romance between them. So yeah, it's one of those things I'm always trying to improve upon.
The dialogue. So how do you manage your dialogue? Do you say it out loud, or like how, what's your process for dialogue?
Yeah, well, so I write these first drafts that I call Mad Lib drafts because I don't fill in things that I can't think of immediately. So I will have, I'll just like underscore a few times, and I often have like quotes and then just an underscore because I want there to be a conversation, but I don't quite know what I want the characters to say yet. Like I'm not clever enough in that moment to come up with it. So yeah, I, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of like layering it draft after draft. Oftentimes I will like discard the first couple things that I come up with just because I feel they might sound cliche or like just corny. So I really try to think of like interesting ways of saying things, I guess.
You know, I always find that romance fans, and Yoni, you're a huge romance fan, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in the fandom groups we're in, romance fans are big collectors of like posters with dialogue quotes, you know what I mean? Or mugs with dialogue quotes where like, just like even with Outlander, you, this, it's not the narrative, it's the actual dialogue that yeah. they're putting on these posters because they're when they're talking to each other, it's that line, that moment where one person says the other one something where you're like, oh wow, he really loves her.
Well, it's also because the romance is generally, especially with the loathe to love, which is my one of my favorite tropes, is that there's a point where there's so much that's unsaid, and then what gets the reader is like, just say it, just come on, come on. And that building of anticipation, it's not even necessarily with the story arc. It's like as the story arc's winding down, we're like, yes, just love, yes, all of the things right now.
Well, I mean, the premise, so you've got two books that do that. You got She Loves
Me. I know, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to do one. I loved it so much. I mean, the main difference, well, you know, one is YA, one is adult, but I liked the dynamic of like coworkers. And it's also, my adult book is very different in that there's like a little more pretending going on with like the radio show. And the YA is a much slower burn.
Ah, so do you find that most of your readers, do you have the demographic of your readers? Are they YA teenagers, or do you have mostly adult readers? What have you discovered?
I'm really not sure because I think there are so many readers that we never see. Mm-hmm. Like I know just from seeing things, like being tagged in things by librarians, like I know there are teens checking it out from libraries that, you know, I'm never seeing them post on Twitter or something. I think it's easy to like be in the book community online and see so many adults. I mean, there are a lot of teens as well. And I'm definitely, when I'm writing YA, I'm writing with teens in mind. But you know, there's still adults that read it.
Well, is the X Talk going to be your only adult book, or are you already planning for all the other characters to have their own breakaway stories?
Yeah, so we signed for two books, and I have in my head, I know what character I want the second one to focus on, so I'll just a matter of finding the right story for that character.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it starts with the character. I don't know how your process is, but definitely always starts with the character for me. And I, you know, especially because you're saying people in romance fall in love with a character and then they read all the spinoffs for it, and that's how the readers operate.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually rarely start with a character. I don't know if I ever have. I usually start with a premise, like a premise that is exciting to me. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of try to see, oh, what kind of character would like be tortured the most by this premise?
Actually, who can I torture?
I started with the premise, and then I obviously have to have two characters, but I keep swapping parts from one character to the other because I want them to be balanced. So I'm like, oh no, if I'm adding this to this character, I'm going to take this other thing away and give it to the other character, and that way I'll have like two fleshed out characters instead of one.
I like that. So,
So my poor character is getting gutted and rebuilt.
Yes, by the end of it, you'll have something. That's
exactly. You know,
first drafts. I just saw someone post online today that they put a sticker on their keyboard that said, first drafts are supposed to suck. Just like a constant reminder. And it hurts me to think it, but it's so true. No. It's unrecognizable first draft to the later draft. You know, I think even my husband watching me work was like trying to think about all the books that he loves and how he's truly convinced that no, those books were all first drafts. It's brilliant and genius. I'm like, no, honey, this is normal. Like, this is revisions and redrafting and going back in. That's normal writing. Anyone who says that their first draft is this famous published novel, I can't even think of an example.
Yeah, no, my first drafts, I'm having to remind myself that now too, because yeah, like I said, they're Mad Libs. They're indecipherable. It's like me, I mean, I do have an outline, but it's like me creating a skeleton for the book, and I'm like going back through and then like adding organs and adding skin.
That's how I do it too. That's how I do it too. I think it's also as I'm a perfectionist, and it hurts me to redo stuff. But at the same time, because I'm a perfectionist, I'm driven to redo stuff. So I'm trying to like balance that by like copy and pasting things to another document. I'm like, okay, just stay here until I find a home for you, and then you'll come back. It'll be fine.
That's excellent.
Yeah. And I can't, for a first draft, if I spend like if I spend longer than a few minutes trying to figure out how to word a particular sentence, I will just obsess over it forever and I'll never move on.
You should keep like a waterproof whiteboard in the shower.
Oh yeah.
For when the moment actually hits you, you can write it down instead of trying to shout to your phone, okay, Google, write down this line, which I've done once or twice. It doesn't work. It comes out weird and muffled. No, this is really good. You know, we have listeners who are writing, and I know that Yonit and I are writing, so it's good to get a lot of craft questions. You know, we're like siphoning information off of you when it comes to career. But like, give an idea. You said something like your first book came out in 2018, right? But when did you write that book?
So I started writing that book in 2014, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been when I got the initial idea and was kind of doing early chapters. Because that book was kind of a circuitous journey, because I signed with my first agent for the third book that I queried. So I queried two books, all rejections. Third one I queried, I signed with my first agent after an R&R, actually, after a revise and resubmit. And then she put that book on submission, a book I wrote after it. And then You'll Miss Me When I'm Gone, she put on like a very small submission round. Before we sort of like had diverging ideas about the book and what to do with it at that point. So I left. It was a pretty mutual parting of ways and amicable. And I started querying again, and all my friends were like, oh, you'll find someone new right away. And it took 6 months and 80 queries, which I think we hear a lot of those stories of like, oh, I sent my first query and then I had 5 offers by the end of the week. Like, those are the ones people talk about a lot because it's exciting. But yeah, so that, you know, it took a while. And then I signed with my agent, my current agent, in March of 2016. And then we sold the book in May of 2016. And then it came out January 2018. So
it's a process. I mean, I think, for querying writers who are listening, it's important for them to know that, because I know that, you know, last year at this time of year, I think it was January last year when I was querying my first of the three, the third one is the one that got me the agent. When I was querying my first, I made a friend online and we were DMing each other and comparing stories, like basically someone to vent to about rejections. And she literally had multiple offers of rep within 30 days of querying her first book ever.
Wow. And
I was like convinced that that was the norm, because she was the first person I'd ever talked to about querying. So I was like, that must be normal. Let me see how long it takes me to get it out. But like, I didn't even occur to me. And then I started noticing there were people that were querying for 10 years and getting an agent after 10 years, and people doing it for a week and getting an agent after a week. And really, it's a matter of timing and taste and subjectivity, and not necessarily a matter of talent. And so knowing that, I know it's hard for people out there to know that, like, they don't have control and they just have to accept that. But that's the truth of it, is you don't have control over the timing. You just have control over your writing.
Yeah. And I do think there is something to be said for having a longer journey, because you know how to write more books. Like, if I had signed with an agent on the first book that I'd ever completed, I would really doubt whether I could write another book, like, or if it had just been a fluke. I mean, yes, like, I do believe that anyone can write another book, but I just feel like that would be, like, I don't know, it would kind of mess with you a little bit. I think it would make things harder.
Do you see a future with that? I agree. Sorry, Uni, I interrupted you.
Okay. Do you see a future for those stories now that you have your groove to revisit them and get them a home?
No, I mean, I just don't have an interest in them anymore. I think my interests have just changed in regard to what I read and what I want to write. And also, those characters weren't Jewish. Like, just looking back, I really don't feel that connected to them. And I feel like maybe that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, that's interesting. I, you know, of the two that I wrote and queried, I think one of them I would revisit and maybe, and one of them I'd like, it should never see the light of day. Ever. I'm like, it was one of those. You're right though, having a long journey matters, because the pressure to have a second book to query made me work so much faster and so much harder, but it was garbage. So coming after that, I was able to produce my third book, which got me the agent, which was more balanced, which I took somewhere in between time-wise on, and I revised it more, like I worked harder on it, but like learning that lesson of how to write a book quickly under pressure, and you can't, I mean, you'll die. Don't write 90,000 words in a week. I did it and you will die. It is bad. Like, my boss thought something wrong with me. It was bad. I think it was 8 days. It was 90,000 words in 8 days. And my students were like, your eyes are all red and my hands were shaking. And I was not a good plan. But I did prove to myself, I can write a second book. And I think you're right about having a little bit more of a journey, because, you know, when you sign on with an agent, you really don't get a chance to touch other books full time until that book is ready, because you keep coming back to it, right? Like, every time I think I can work on my book, I get another email saying, hey, we're going to do this thing. So I think, having that experience is like really good for people to hear that there's a variety of experiences out there, and that getting an agent on your first book isn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. And that is also, I mean, it definitely can be. I firmly believe in publishing. There are no absolutes. There are no like averages, no standards, no standard experience or like a standard length of time. There are standards in terms of like writing, hopefully.
Well, I mean, Yonit's writing, you're writing your first book, right, Yonit?
Yes, I am working on my first book.
Yes, but you have the benefit of listening to everyone else's mistakes.
Yes. Not that that helps, because I, again, to go back to the anxiety, I'm like, okay, am I putting too much of myself in this book? Am I using up all my good ideas in one book? Should I save some of them for another book?
There's no such thing.
I think it's also, when you have a bit of a longer journey, it gives you time to, so like the number one piece of advice I give people these days is like, whatever you have out, like always be working on the next thing, because you should really never be putting, it's just not mentally healthy to be putting all of your eggs in one basket writing wise. If you spend 15 years working on a book and then you query it and no one wants it, then you're like, and you're not working on anything else.
Yeah.
That's just like a tremendous blow. But if you have something else that you are excited to get out there, like that not only lessens the impact of that rejection, but it gives you something exciting to focus on.
I mean,
it's a distraction too.
I'm actually working on an anthology also, but I'm seeing Dahlia's tweets about taxes and I'm afraid.
How does it work, Rachel, when you're working on an anthology? How does it get divided up?
You know, I'm not sure. All I know is that a few times a check would just appear in my mailbox and I was happy. I definitely could have asked more questions, but I did not. I just chose to like be pleasantly surprised when money showed up. So I am honestly not sure how they handled all of that. I'm sure I could have asked them and gained some more insight. And I usually am someone who asks a lot of questions, but I think because I just assumed sometimes I like going into things with low expectations and being like pleasantly surprised. So I went into it thinking like, maybe we wouldn't be paid.
maybe no one will buy this book.
Yeah.
Everyone's buying this book.
Sure.
Are you glad you did it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's the most important thing.
Yes. No, I loved getting to write that story. It was one of the, as soon as the first line came to me, I just like sat down and basically wrote the whole thing. Like it was one of the smoothest writing experiences that I'd ever had. And it was also the first short story I'd ever written.
What?
First to this day, since I only wrote it, you know, a year and a half ago.
You didn't have to write short stories in school, or you're saying like really?
No, I mean, I studied journalism. So, I mean, yes, to a degree, those were stories, but yeah, I had never really written a short story or like studied short stories. I could not tell you who my favorite short story author is.
My goodness.
What was different about the process for this story? I mean, besides it went smoothly, but you know, character development and dialogue, like how was it different between your full length books?
So because the whole thing was taking place like over a few hours, I was able to plot it out that way, and I kind of had an image of where I wanted the main characters to end up at the end. I was also trying, like all my other books are in first person, and this one I was trying to write it in first person and it was not working. And as soon as I got that line in my head, the first line, it came to me in third person, and I was like, oh, maybe this should be in third person, and that just like changed everything for me.
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, that's a really hard decision to make, is if you're going to go first person or third person.
Yeah, and I can't see myself using it for a YA. It's definitely not very common in YA, a little more common in romance, but I just much prefer first person. And yeah, for whatever reason, third just worked better for this one.
Yeah, I noticed that when I'm reading middle grade, it's a lot of third person. Mm-hmm. When I'm reading YA, it like switches to first person. And
we're so arrogant.
It really gets in there. Like I think there are certain series where it's harder to, because they're YA series, where it's hard to tell that because the POV keeps switching, but they're still third person. So I have to like, takes me a few lines and I'm like, okay, which character's perspective are we seeing right over their shoulder from? Like it takes me a little bit to get into it. So I prefer first person in YA. So I'm right there with you. But the story, do you mind if I read the first line out loud? Because you're saying,
oh yeah, go ahead.
So your first line, this is the line that, and you saved it, the line that you ended up with. Okay.
Yep.
Somehow, Miri had wound up dating the only other Jewish kid in 11th grade.
Yeah. It was sort of like the thesis statement for the whole story and kind of where my idea had bloomed from. And that was, yeah, that was, I thought it was, you know, funny and very representative of my experience. And it just really set the stage.
It's a very sweet concept, right? Like if you're in a school where there's only other one Jewish kid and you're someone who would rather date a Jewish kid, you're going to at some point be like, well, I think I'll date him. Like it's, you're kind of thrown together. So the concept that it like occurs during an earthquake, I'm not going to read the last line because the last line is really sweet, but I don't want to spoil it. So I'm recommending to our listeners that they, if you haven't got It's All Spiel or borrowed it from us yet, come on people. And if you don't request it from your library, then you're being ridiculous because this is a really fun anthology with lots of fun stories. And it's basically like getting 20 novels in one book. Okay, yes. Listeners, all right. Yeah,
and as a parent, it's a book that I want to keep on the bookshelf and not give to my children so that they discover it and enjoy it without me pushing it on them.
I love that. I feel like they should like blurb certain books that way.
Do not read this.
Like parents only.
You know, it would be nice. I think I saw, was it Catherine Locke put up online the other day, you know, what was your first non-Holocaust Jewish fiction that you read? And other than All of a Kind Family, most people's responses were adult Jewish fiction because
YA that wasn't Holocaust, and I don't really consider Holocaust fiction YA, YA that wasn't Holocaust didn't exist until, in my opinion, the last couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years. It really wasn't there. It didn't exist. You really had to hunt for it. And sometimes you'd find it, but it would be more like, oh, the character happens to be Jewish and it gets mentioned once. Right.
That was my experience too. And why I wanted to write practicing Jewish characters, because it would be like a passing mention and then I would get so excited and then, you know, that's it. That's all you get. Or it would be I use this comparison a lot, but it would be like the main character's best friend. And it would just be like, Hannah can't hang out on Fridays.
You hate this, that like they'll throw in a Jewish character on the side and do nothing with them.
Oh, but I've read really, really good ones where it's unexpected. And again, it tends to be, it's a Jewish author. I read a lot of YA fantasy, or I guess this could have been adult fantasy, but fantasy and sci-fi. And I do like when they throw in a Jewish character. And the one, it just like, it like literally throws me. I actually stopped reading and I was like, he kissed a mezuzah? What? Where am I? What is happening?
Oh, that, you know what? I could see the value in that, in having just like a hint of their Judaism just to normalize it. Okay. All right.
It was so good. It made me relate to the character in a different way, because they would throw out little things like, because he was, part of it was that he, as a classic, I want to say it's YA, but I'll ask Victoria later, but it's a young man who's now separated from his parents. So he remembers his mom cooking Friday night dinner, and he remembers the songs. Like, there's a lot of our home life and family life that is very like building to our character and our memories. Like, those are the things you remember. When everyone comes together for a Seder, like that's a formative memory.
So Rachel, what book do you remember reading as a Jewish fiction book that wasn't Holocaust when you were younger?
Oh gosh, see, this is, I know it's so hard. Like I'm honestly not sure. Like, I'm positive there was one, but yeah, I really don't know. You know, I remember looking at that thread and there was a book that was mentioned that I related to, but now of course I can't remember what it was. So this is a really thrilling bit of audio, I know.
Well, for me, I wrote Exodus and other people were like, yes, that's it. And that's not for kids. Why was there and other people, a lot of people said The Chosen. And My Name Is Asher Lev. So it was basically like a repeat.
I haven't read any of those for whatever reason.
Oh, they're all fantastic books, but they were the only books. That was it. Yes. I mean, they're wonderful. It's great to have them and to collect them. But yeah, for something that's accessible to a middle grade or young adult, and they're not written for middle grade or young adult, to have access to those books, and really that's all we had. And I'm really looking forward to the day when all of these books like fill up an entire section in the library, where the library just has like Jewish YA fiction, Jewish middle grade, Jewish adult. And it's, you know, you have to decide what you're going to take out because there's so much. And I think the day is coming. So, and I think that Rachel, like I used the word last time we spoke, and I said, like, I think at some point you switch over from being a debut author into being a career prolific author. And I think you might be there.
Thank you. And it's one of those things that always feels very tenuous, right? Because there's never a guarantee of the next thing, which is why it's always good to be writing that next thing and you know, continuing to try to improve your craft. And I just remembered what that book was, and it was Letters from Rivka.
Letters from Rivka. Okay, I haven't read that, but
It was also historical, and like literally one of the main things I remember from it was just her having ringworm.
Mm-hmm. What? Letters from Rivka. Okay, I'm gonna look it up. Yeah, I think that's awesome. Why'd she have ringworm?
It was about immigrating to the U.S. in like the early 1900s.
Oh wow!
I see it. Letters from Rivka with an F by Karen Hess. It's a historical novel that came out in 1992 about a Jewish family's emigration from Russia in 1919. Okay, I'm adding it to my Goodreads. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, I remember enjoying it, but also, again, also like historical, also kind of a bummer.
Right.
But not Holocaust.
But it's 1919.
I was going to say, there are other ways to show Jewish traumatic experiences. So some of the books were listed. I was like, that was still a pogrom. That was still like, there was still stuff going down in that book. It wasn't just like a person's experience. It was like, collectively, this bad stuff happening to my whole family. And, you know, here's how this character deals with it.
So I'm really excited that we were able to do this and have this conversation, rehab this conversation.
Yes. You know what? It was better than the one before.
I agree. Yeah, and putting that out there. No pounds of glass and no big salads. but if Rachel, can you tell the readers where to find your work and where to find you if they want to interact with you on social media, if you're interested?
Yeah, I am on Twitter and Instagram at @Arlyn_Solomon. So RLYNN_SOLOMON. And my website is rachelsolomonbooks.com.
And when do your next two books come out? You said your YA is coming out soon?
Yeah, so my next YA, Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, comes out in June of this year. And then my adult book will come out next year, next spring.
Mazel tov. That's very
good. Thank you so much. Thank you both. This was really wonderful. I am glad that we had a chance to talk again. And yeah, just love that this book is out there and was really, really thrilled to be part of it.
Oh my God. The third time will be great too.
Oh God. Definitely gonna have to hang out and do it again. We are not a one-off. Thank you for coming and joining us at the Kiddish Book Club.
Thank you.
Yeah.